In this episode, I sit down with my friend Bobby Lacking. He is a senior vice president of a local state chartered bank. Now, we had fun discussing his background, our relationship, even collateralizing a life insurance policy in light of Nelson's third rule, don't do business with banks outside of savings and checking, i.e. don't be dependent upon third-party lenders. I'm telling you, I had fun and learned some things. Hope you enjoy listening.
And nowadays, you know, a starter home's $400,000 here in Texas. I don't know where everybody else is at, but the real estate values have just went nuts over the last 15 years here. It's, if you own property 15 years prior, you're sitting on a pretty good asset right now because it's appreciated naturally by probably 40 to 50%. And you've seen that.
Or 100, 150%.
Some of them have been over 100%, which is incredible. But you got to look at all those factors, because if you look at somebody that's, you know, that's got a lot of history, for instance, flip that equation, and they're a 680 credit score, they've got two mortgages they've paid off, never missed a beat. They've got four car loans they've paid off, never missed a beat. We call those your core debts. So they may have a medical collection on there because their wife went to the hospital and their insurance didn't pay it. This bumped their score down. Well, to me, I'd rather have that 680 than I would this kid over here at 750 because he has no history.
Is that a tier two?
I want to see data. Tier two, yeah. Tier two is typically between 680 and 720. Tier three is 620 to 680. You get below 620, we just call that hit the door.
So, <Don't even come.
laughs> I'm just kidding. That's considered tier four. I mean, you're getting into a special asset credit. Anything under 620 right now is considered special asset credit. So you're going to have to go to a lender that's going to do special credit.
Is that like the pawn shop or
it's
what?
Pawn shop. It's a pawn shop for lenders. You're going to have to go to a company that will offer subpar loans like that. So your rate's going to be a lot higher.
Sure.
Your origination fee is going to be a lot higher. And it's sad because they punish you for having a bad credit score. And they're the ones that they can't afford it the most.
Yeah.
So they're the ones struggling. And it's just sad. It's the day and age we live in. But credit score goes a long way, especially in corporate banking, more so than community banking. But everything's tiered on a box level now because there's just
– What do you mean a box level?
When I say a box level, everything's tiered based off – you've got three key categories. You've got loan amount total, you've got credit score, and your overall credit risk rating. So if you look at credit score versus the loan amount, you may just be denied right off the bat if you're under a 620 and say you want a mortgage. We're kind of talking about mortgage loans here. You're going to be automatically denied by a premium mortgage company like this, just doing conventional mortgages. You're probably going to have to go FHA or some type of specialized system where you have less cash down. Your rate's going to be higher. You're going to have a big origination fee. It's going to cost you more to get into that house, but we can get it done. I don't do a lot of mortgage, but I've got a guy I refer out to because I mainly do commercial. But it hurts you not having good credit. A lot of times it's not the people's fault directly. You know, they're trying to help somebody, or just be very careful about that. If you're trying to help somebody, don't get into that situation. It happens all the time. I see it, unfortunately. But yeah, that's a huge player right now in today's market. Most stuff we're seeing right now, local level, Texas is booming. The economy is doing very well here in North Texas, and really anywhere in Texas you go, it's booming for the most part. Austin is probably the number one growth in the United States. I think Tampa Bay, Florida, there's some places in Florida that are huge. But Texas is just booming. A lot of people moving to North Texas. The cost of living is cheaper here than it is a lot of places like California. Even see a lot of people coming from Michigan up in New York area because it's so expensive to live up there.
Illinois,
I mean, an
Chicago.
Apartment. I had a guy move down from Chicago, actually, I talked to, and he was paying $4,500 a month for an apartment up there, a little bitty, like, just studio apartment. It was in downtown Chicago.
Yeah, one of the
very
big
nice,
high-rises.
Very nice. Yeah. It was cool. I love Chicago. I'm a big baseball fan, so I love Wrigley Field. And it'd be cool to live there for a little while, but it's
not cool
fun.
To visit,
it's
you know, walking
fun.
Down the Magic Mile. Or I think it's a Magic neat, Mile is what they call
Magic
it.
Magic Mile, yeah. It's really neat. All the pizza's
did the riverboat
good.
Tours, you know, and the architecture. Yeah. Chicago's cool.
It's really cool, yeah. I've been there.
To visit.
I really like it to visit, but if you're trying to build wealth, like it's what you're teaching with Infinity Banking, it's kind of hard to do that unless you're just making a ton of money. Yeah. You know, you're not worried about it. But if you're trying to build wealth, you know, you need to minimize your expense and maximize your income.
You know, that's the two really fundamental principles in all of economics,
exactly.
If you're trying to accumulate something.
Sure, exactly. And it's hard to do that when you're paying $4,500 a month in rent.
Yeah, no question.
So, but cost of living is cheaper here. So the housing market is just booming. And you know this, but I'm saying this for your listeners. It's incredible here. So the cost to get in a house now, used to, I mean, probably 15 years ago, wouldn't you say? You could get into a mortgage loan down here for $150,000. I mean, a starter home.
All day long.
Like 15 years.
Yeah.
Now it's $350,000. So it's increased over 100% just to get into a starter home in Texas. And they're nice homes, but gosh, you know, I mean, people that most people I see on the daily that are coming in applying for me say the husband's a firefighter and the wife's a nurse. Well, both of them together, they're making almost $200,000 a year combined income. Well, you can, that's pretty good buying power, $200,000 a year. But you're trying to build a $700,000 house because you're trying to keep up with, you don't want a starter home and you want kind of the next tier. You're looking at $650,000, $700,000. Well, your mortgage payment's $4,800 a month. So now your debt to income is high. Even making $200,000, your housing debt to income is higher than what you typically used to see. And that's just where we're at nowadays. That's why I think you see more people renting than you do buying nowadays, because not everybody's making $200,000 a year as a couple. And if you're single, then you're really, you know, unless you just have a really good job, it's hard to buy a house in Texas right now. It really is, because the average income I see is probably around $60,000 a year.
Is that right?
That walks in the door for a single occupant. I don't care what their occupation is. Around $60,000 a year is what you see. So you double that, that's $120,000. Well, $120,000 a year is not what it used to be. That's
kind of home is that going to buy?
It's not going to buy much of anything. You know, you'd have to buy, it'd be hard for you to buy on the market from a new home. You'd have to buy something that's secondary. But even at that, they're not cheap.
Man, these $40,000, $50,000 homes, you know, 10, 15 years ago, they're going for $150,000, $175,000. It's ridiculous.
And you got to put $50,000 in them to get them livable.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly right. So it's become, I'm not sure how it's going to succeed in the future, but it's really become a problem, to be honest with you, for homeowners.
Look at all the real estate experts the real estate markets have created, you know, because you buy some houses, you know, 10 years ago, you look like a genius, you know.
Yes, exactly right. And everybody wants to be in the real estate game nowadays. And there's a lot of money to be made still in the real estate game, but you got to know what you're doing more and more nowadays, because not everything's a good deal. If it looks like a good deal, it's got hair on it. I guarantee you.
I say it all the time, Bobby, like, what, everything walking down the street's not a deal. That says they're a deal. They're not a deal.
Yeah, there's fewer and fewer deals out there, and there's bigger money that's coming to Texas now too. And a lot of the stuff I see on investment property purchase, I've got a customer say selling an investment property because they're going to retire and they're trying to cash out.
Have them call me.
They're exactly. Well, the people, like, you know, the people that are buying those are cash offers. They're not financing that debt.
Yeah.
They're paying cash for it.
Yeah.
So
in California.
California. That's been a huge thing. A lot of people out there, they've got $1 million homes that if they were here, they'd be a $4 million home. You know, the property value out there is just ginormous compared to here. So they're selling their house in California for $1 million. And they're coming here and buying three times the house they had for $500,000.
Yeah.
And then they're pocketing $500,000.
And that house at $1 million in California was, they probably gave $150,000 or $200,000 for it.
So cash is prevalent, believe it or not. Some people may not believe this, but we're probably seeing more cash flow nowadays. It's just money in the bank, deposits, opportunities to buy life insurance, that kind of thing. People have cash right now, believe it or not. The cash is there. It's just they're cashing out. They're scared of the stock market in some cases. So, I mean, what you preach here is really, I mean, that's the next best thing. That's the solution. Yeah. So to tie that in, I thought that was really cool.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely, because it's a great model, and I think more people need to understand it.
Well, tell me, and I appreciate that, because I understand you're a commercial lender, and I know you do real estate as well. Do you do both commercial real estate, residential real estate, and just
both
commercial lending?
Sure. No, we do both. So we do not have a mortgage division. I refer all my mortgage stuff out. We do a lot of interim construction lending here. Because as I mentioned, Texas is booming right now. So there's homes going in everywhere. There's lots being developed everywhere. We are the bank providing funding for that development. We do a lot of that. So we'll finance, say a borrower wants to come in, and we pick and choose our borrowers pretty good. So these are very strong developers. They do a lot of sales, very big net worth folks.
Y'all still looking over their shoulder, though, on the project?
We're definitely looking over their shoulder, and we're dealing with somebody that we have full trust in. So, for instance, our relationship, like, I know that guy like I know you. Yeah. I know his character. I know where he's at. He's done this before. He's got the history. Like we mentioned earlier on the credit report, I'm dealing with that guy that's paid off three mortgages, not that guy that's got two credit cards.
Right.
So you got to know the background of that guy. But we deal with people that's developed a lot since the 80s, you know, back when it was booming back then. So we do a lot of that. We do a lot of lot developments. So we're actually funding the purchase of the dirt. We're funding the purchase of the utilities, underground work going in, the curbs, gutters, lights, infrastructure, the municipality requirements to put that subdivision in. A lot of developers right now are trying to go outside city limits to do stuff because city codes have gotten ridiculous here. Tap fees have gotten really expensive. Used to, you'd go there and do something for $250 for a tap fee. Now it's $4,500 in Burleson specifically. But it's gotten really expensive to build within the city. There's more code you got to put up with. And it's all to be, you know, energy efficient, compliance. It's all probably good stuff. It's just really putting a dent in the homeowner's checkbook.
Yeah. They say it's good stuff. So
they say it
stuff.
Is. They say it is. And there's vacuum tests you have to do now for to be green and to lower down energy costs and stuff. Like I said, it's all probably positive things.
Yeah, you know, I get it. This little town that we live in Alvarado, they've had to increase their tap fees because everybody's moving down here and the city can barely keep up delivering the services, you know. I mean, somebody's got to pay for it. It's a purchaser of the home.
I've actually seen a master plan, and I've sent it to you for downtown Alvarado where you're at here, that they're trying to just really revise it because of the home growth coming in. And Alvarado used to be, well, how many people? It was a small town. I'm from Johnson County, so I grew up in this
area. It's about 4,000 when we first
4,000, and now it's almost 20, or the projected 20. It's probably about 8 to 10,000 right now, maybe.
Yeah, I'd say 6 to 8, but it is projected. I mean, I was on the Chamber of Commerce, and all of the homes that are that have recently been constructed, the ones that are being constructed, and the projects that are coming, I mean, it's going to hit 20,000 within like the next 8 years.
And Burleson, where I'm at, is very similar, or close to Fort Worth, ties into it, and it's probably at 60,000 now. Yeah. And I was at a chamber meeting the other day, and they're projecting that to be at 100,000 in 5 years. So you're talking about a 45% growth in 5 to 6 years. That's a lot of people.
That's a lot.
They got to live somewhere. So that's why you're seeing housing development. Apartments are flying up everywhere.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, James can attest to this. We probably have six apartments going in. We're talking 200-plus unit apartments.
There's two in Alvarado.
Two in Alvarado.
Alvarado, Texas. So, it used to be the stepchild of Johnson County, I'm just saying.
And I think the multi-living is so popular now because what we just talked about is people can't buy houses.
Yeah, right.
They have to rent because they can't qualify for a house. But what's crazy about that to me is I'm looking at these people's rent, and their rent's almost as much as a mortgage payment. Yeah. They just don't have to qualify. They don't have the big cash down requirement. They're not tied. A lot of the younger folks that are coming in, they don't want the commitment to a 30-year mortgage. I can't blame them because, you know, if you do the math, which you and I are both math guys, if you do the math on a 30-year mortgage at 5% on a $400,000 mortgage, you're going to end up paying $900,000 for that house. And people don't realize how much, like, wow, the guy that came up with amortization is a genius. He's dead now, but he's brilliant. Bankers love him. People, I don't think, understand that concept. Right. But you're renting, and they're like, oh, I'm throwing money down the drain. Well, I used to be kind of thinking that, but now I've kind of switched. Like, if you have other avenues, like something that can earn you money, like a policy, or you have other investments outside the real estate, I think you could replace that a little bit.
Yep.
Real estate's really a great investment still, always will be probably. It's always appreciated. History says buy real estate, buy real estate. It's just shot up so much in the last 6 to 7 years that I don't know if it can sustain that increase. It's going to still go up, but not like it has.
Yeah.
So there's other avenues out there is my point to invest in outside of real estate. If you wanted to and you just want to rent, then you can, but be prudent with your money and invest it in something else. Don't just sit on it.
You know, you said it twice earlier, I believe. You know, you got to, you know, my words, but you said it. Yeah. It's like you've got to
steal your words all the time, Jay.
Spend less than you make, period. There's fundamental. Yeah. Sure. You want to accumulate any kind of capital, you have to spend less than you make, period.
Sure. Exactly.
And I get it. You know, we're all trying to make more. I get it, but you can't jump over that, you know, because if you don't control that, what you save, you know, spending less than you make, and the solution is to just go make more, your spending's going to probably outpace your increase in earnings.
Absolutely. And you see it all the time. I mean, cost of living has went up so much in the last 4 or 5 years, really, just because the rates have gone up so much. Going to buy a car, I mean, I'm seeing $1,500 a month car payments now, where I used to see $400 or $500 a month car payments. It's normal. Like $1,000 plus car payment is normal now on a credit report. It's incredible.
That's what my wife says.
Well, it's just, I mean, you think about a nice car now is going to cost you $70,000 to $80,000.
Isn't that something?
It's crazy. Well, it used to be what a house cost.
Yeah.
So the increase in just cost of living has went up so much. You've got to even be more prudent with your money because to outpace your earnings versus your expenses, you got to have something you're earning interest on or something that's bringing money back into you long term, or you're going to turn 60 and look back and be like, man, I got no retirement. So, and like what you do here in Affinity Banking, I mean, that's a retirement base. I mean, it really is. A policy is a retirement feature.
No question. You can, these babies will throw off beautiful cash flow, passive income in retirement. You know,
absolutely.
Well, look, you said character earlier, and then I wrote down credit, looking at the C's of banking.
Sure.
Right. Yep. And then there's collateral.
Collateral. So, we love collateral. Yeah.
And I bet y'all never under collateralize, do you?
We do not under collateralize anything. Absolutely not. It depends on who it is. We'll do some unsecured debt to a few folks if they're really good borrowers. Somebody I've had a relationship like you, if you wanted something unsecured, I'd do it.
Okay.
We don't it. We don't like it.
No. Yeah. I mean, I get unsecured. But would you do non-recourse loans?
No, absolutely not. Don't even ask me.
Everybody talks about them on the big wide world, but very few people have them or even can get them.
Even the big guys, you know, be honest with you, we deal with a lot of clients, hiring clients, believe it or not, just due to our owner, because he's got a lot of connections. And he's brought some pretty big borrowers into us, and they deal with, like, for instance, Chase Private Bank. That's probably one of the most elite banks you can deal with, and everybody wants to be part of Chase Private Bank. And it's a great place. But even Chase Private Bank will not do very much stuff without a guarantee. There are cases where they will, but it's very rare. It's maybe 20% of the time they'll do a non-recourse loan. We will not.
They're short-term, too.
No community bank, I don't think, in the U.S. right now would do a non-recourse loan, unless it was a specific case with somebody they've known for a long time, or I've ran into some ESOP situations where somebody that owns the company that used to personally guarantee it moved their company into an ESOP, and they no longer want to personally guarantee that debt. That makes sense because they don't own the company. Well, that company needs to be strong enough to support that debt. We don't like it. We have done one for this specific borrower because of the relationship with that guy. And he's a great borrower, but that's the only one we have currently on the books. And we pinched our nose when we did it. We don't like non-recourse debt. So we want collateral, and we want a personal guarantee on anything. Yeah. And we do unlimited guarantees. There's different types of guarantees. There's partial guarantees. There's unlimited guarantees. So if you have a partner in the deal, you have $1 million debt, you do a full guarantee, you're guaranteeing that whole $1 million. Even though you're 50-50 with that partner, if you do a partial guarantee, you're only guaranteeing 500%. So if you're out there borrowing money, make sure you ask your bank for that. We'll do a partial guarantee. We're okay with that. Oh, yeah, absolutely. As long as the guy or the person, woman, whatever it may be in the case, is strong enough to support that other percentage.
Yeah.
So you're the money man and you've got a sweat equity guy in there.
Yeah.
Well, we're going to want an unlimited guarantee from you because you're the reason we're doing the loan.
Yeah.
Well, if they've got financial backing and they can support the other 50, we'll do a 50% guarantee to you, 50% guarantee for them.
Sure. I've not had the pleasure of experiencing that partial, you know,
partial or
guarantee.
Unlimited only.
Yeah, no, it's like
unlimited
it's
only.
A, you know, $4 million deal, and there's four of them. In my example, they're all on the hook for $4 million.
Yeah,
you
exactly
know?
Right. Yep.
So is there another C in banking? You know, character, credit, collateral, cash flow?
Cash flow would be one. That's a huge thing right now. That's a good point you brought up. Cash flow is probably more prevalent now than it ever has been because a lot of companies are in a situation where they're leveraged, highly leveraged, meaning everything they own has got debt against it.
Is it like small to mid-sized companies? Are you talking about in Johnson County, Texas, or are you talking about worldwide?
Small, mid-sized companies and the bigger guys too. You see right now, especially right now, because rates have increased, cash flow has become a problem for a lot of companies.
Oh my gosh, you have a business, huge. Everything's collateralized.
Everything's collateralized, cash flow is a problem. You're barely making enough to pay your debts. So that'll make you, you know, as a community banker, you've put an eye on that. You've raised the flag on that. We're just gonna watch that internally. And we may go from when we were requiring annual financials, now we want them monthly or quarterly or whatever the case may be.
Stop it.
We do that quite a bit. Because we want to see how you're managing your business and you're not over leveraging yourself too much. Because we've even built in covenants in loans. We do a lot of that where we may have a liquidity covenant or a debt service covenant. So we go off DSCR, which is a debt service coverage ratio. And everything's based off that specific debt service coverage ratio for the specific entity or on a global scale. We do a lot of global debt service coverage because the entity for the borrower may be new. It's not cash flowing yet. It's a startup, whatever the case may be. But the borrower, the guarantor in this case, would have other avenues of income coming in outside of that company. Maybe it's a different industry, which we like because it's not all categorized in one industry. Something happens in that industry, home building, for instance, say it tanks. Well, they own a freight company. Now they're doing freight brokering. So they've got other assets or avenues of income. So we look at that a lot. Debt service coverage is huge right now, which ties into cash flow.
It's
massive.
It makes complete sense.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
Sign the dotted line to John Henry. It's like, here's the collateral.
Yep.
And you know, result of production.
Sure.
Right. And then, oh, wait, the signature guarantee all of the future production. Of course.
Sure.
Yeah. And, you know, well, I mean, frankly, if I'm, and I have no relationship with the bank other than, sure, you know, the yeah, relationship is a lender, talking, borrower, and I don't have any loans. I mean, I'm not, sure, with.
You don't like to pay interest, James.
I don't like to pay
interest. You like
interest
to get paid interest.
I like to earn interest.
You like to earn it. Yeah, which is smart.
I make my wife pay interest. You know?
That's right.
But if you're going to put, you know, the stability of a bank matters, in mm-hmm, my opinion. Sure. I get the, you know, the FDIC and all of that. But it's kind of like a life insurance company. Well, I'm going to put my capital in there, but I want them to be conservative.
Sure.
And I want them to be a little more conservative.
Sure.
You know, same with the bank.
Strength,
I mean,
of the bank. Yeah. And you need to be looking at that. So, I mean, a lot of people don't realize if you're a state, we're a state chartered bank, but it's federal information. So most, sure, yeah, federal banks and state chartered banks, everything's available. You can go on any FDIC regulated bank and you can check their numbers on FDIC.gov and look at the UBPR report. We call it the UBIPR report. Go on there, check out your bank, look at their health, look at their capital.
Well, what would they be looking for?
Yeah, specifically. So you want to look to see, is that bank leveraged in debt? Does it have debt at all? Like, for instance, we have no debt. Our owners, we're 100% paid for. We have zero debt. We're in a little bit of an anomaly. I'll give a plug real quick if it's okay.
Nope.
For
yeah, absolutely.
So, like, our owner is very strong. He bought us in 2017. And he hasn't pulled a dividend out since he bought us. So that's huge. And I sell that a lot to depositors because you got to look at that. You got to look at the strength of the bank. Well, what's the strength of the bank? The strength of the bank is the owner and how the management is handling that business. You want to make sure they don't have a lot of bad loans on the books. And you can see this on the UBPR report. You can see their profit and loss statement. You can see their current capital ratio.
Can anybody go to this website?
Anybody can go to it. FDIC.gov. You can look at the UBPR report. Pull up your specific bank. You got to have the actual name of the bank. Pull it up, and you can see their entire financials. They post quarterly. 9/30 is the fiscal year end for banks, so in the end of September. So you go in right now and pull up our 12/31/23 numbers and look at our bank. Look at the health of the bank. Look at the asset class. Do they have any reported special asset loans? We have very few. I don't think we even had one on there. Some banks have a lot. For instance, the Silicon Bank Valley situation. So we'll get in. I know that we don't have a lot of time to finish that.
For another segment.
But the Silicon Valley Bank, what happened with them is, they had massive amounts of bonds on the books where they were putting money in bonds, long-term bonds, at low rates.
Yeah.
They got caught up. Really, Silicon Bank was not a horrible bank.
Right.
They just got caught up in people pulling deposits out because they thought the bank was going under because they had a liquidity crunch.
Inverse relationship between bond values and interest rates.
Exactly right. And they had, what they had done is, and they thought they were doing a good thing.
Yeah.
They thought they were doing good, but they put a bunch of money in bonds at a low rate long term. Well, they got into a position where they had a run on deposits because people could see their earnings were going down. Yeah. And there were some other things involved that I don't want to get into because I don't really know. So I don't want to say something.
Well,
they were
lending into, you know, highly speculative
some
tech companies
stuff,
and all.
But they had a run on deposits. Yeah. So what you look at there is you got to look at cash on hand, liquid value of that bank. Do they have enough bank? A lot of people don't understand the model of banking. All that money is not in deposits and are safe in the bank office. Yeah, it's not. It's totally different.
Is
situation.
There any money in there? Is it all digits?
We use your money to invest in loans.
What?
And we have to pay interest on those loans.
It's a guaranteed
interest.
Which is
the Fed funds rate. Right now it's about 5.5%. So if we do not have deposits to loan against that debt, we have to go borrow that from the Federal Home Loan Bank at 5.5% Fed funds rate. So we have to pay the bank. Depending on you want to look at loans to deposits. So I'm jumping around a bit. Loans to deposit ratio on the UBPR report. That's going to tell you how much cash on hand that bank has versus what they've lent out. If they're 100% loan to deposits, they're having to borrow money to loan you from the Fed funds.
And bank. You can actually do that. There
you
are
can.
No reserve requirements currently in the North America
you
banking
can do
system.
And they're going to really heavily look at your capital at the bank. That's huge right now. We just went through an audit pass. Went really well, but we've got a really good capital ratio. Could be more. Every bank's could be more. But the capital is what they look at. That's what you fall back on. Typically, like if a bank sells, they're going to sell for 2.5 times capital. That's kind of the going. Could be more, could be less, depending on, but that's a current model. So you look at capital. look at the risk loans they have on there, and look at liquidity on hand. That's huge. So if they have a run on deposits, we have a report that we pull that'll tell us all of our uninsured deposits. And what does that mean? That's anybody that has more than the FDIC allowed insurance at our bank. Mm-hmm. So if we had a run on deposits, most people are going to pull out that amount of money because everything else is insured. So if something, we went under, you're going to get your money back. Well, unfortunately, fortunately, I guess I would say for Silicon Bank Valley, everybody got their money back because us taxpayers paid.
Nobody's lost money on the recent history of banks.
No, they have
not. Because the Federal Reserve.
The feds pulled them out.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I say the feds pulled out. You and I pulled them out with our tax dollars.
Yeah, no question.
In essence. So, but the America pulled out these banks. And it'll continue to happen, unfortunately, with the bigger guys. Yeah. We've kind of had some words with them because we're a small community bank. That probably wouldn't happen for a small community bank. Yeah. So you need to be
In my personal opinion, and I don't know, and it's a personal opinion. I'm speaking strictly for myself, my own opinion.
Yeah.
I think the feds do that to ensure, because in my opinion, in general, the banking system in North America is fragile and around the world.
It is.
And so they're going to step in and make sure they go above the, you know, $250,000 deposit guarantees and what have you, to prevent a contagion of bank runs. That's
true. Yeah, no, absolutely. And that's what happened with them. They had a run on their deposits, and everybody started like, hey, I want my money.
Yeah.
And they didn't have enough money in the bank to give back their depositors. They literally did not have enough money because they had it all in the bond portfolio. So they
And then if interest rates go up and the bond values go down and you've got to sell those, you're losing money on the sell to produce the liquidity.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, that's kind of a
very risky.
Yeah.
It's very risky. So, yeah, we can get into more of that. There's other ways to avoid that. Like there's a product called IntraFi Network you can get in that can actually exceed the 250 limit. We just talked to them.
Well,
it's a network of banks.
So no idea about this.
Another segment. So we can get into a little bit if you want to right now. So there's a specific company called IntraFi, and what they do is the guy that started it used to run the FDIC. Like he was the chairman of the board.
One?
I believe it's chairman. I can't remember his name. I have to get you the exact information on it. But we just met with them, and it's an actual program that comes in. It's a network of banks that you come and you sign up. You have to be a healthy bank. Not anybody can join with it. You have to qualify. But you go in, and the way they structure this is, for instance, James Nethery could come to me and say, hey, Bobby, I've got a $250,000 CD with you here, and I just sold this big piece of property I have. I'm about to make $2 million off of it. I want to put that $2 million into a CD or a Fed funds account. We've got some really good deposit rates right now because rates are up. So maybe you want to use one of those avenues, but I'm worried about FDIC insurance.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's do this. We have a program we just partnered with called IntraFi Network, and you can Google this. It used to be called CDARS, CDARS, Community Deposit. It'll do CDs or demand deposits.
Okay.
You can put it in either avenue. And what it does is you bank with me, James banks with me, Grandview Bank takes your deposits, and we invested in other banks all around the country. Could be somebody in Pennsylvania. It could be somebody in Texas. It could be somebody in Florida. It doesn't matter. They're in the network. They're FDIC insured.
These are time deposits.
These banks are healthy. They're fully insured up to 250.
Yeah.
So we allocate all your $2 million you just made across the board. You're 100% insured now up to that $2 million.
What does that cost,
it's
depositor?
Completely free.
So that's almost like the idea. That is the idea of mutuality, or the idea of the concept of a co-op.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. They build a little bit of a fee in there. For instance, like if there's a rate, they get a tenth of a point or something like that into the whatever rate you're getting paid off the model. But it's all paid through that network. You don't pay a fee for it. You get a consolidated statement across the board where you see where all your deposits are. You'll see the bank, because you may have deposits. You'll have to fill out a form telling me, like, okay, I bank with Silicon Bank in California, so don't put any money in there because I'm already over the limit. So we put that on the list, and they won't send it to that bank. They'll send it to every other bank in the network. And this is something fairly new to us. It's been around for years.
I've never heard of it.
Yeah, we just started looking at it because we've brought in some higher-end clients where we're at with bigger deposits. Like I mentioned earlier, deposits are huge right now. Yep. So a lot of people have cash. I mean, it's just where it's at, but they want to make money on it.
Sure.
They don't want to invest in real estate because the crazy increase, it's a 10-year, 20-year payout. We're paying 5% on an 18-month CD. It's quick, in and out. Like, let's throw it in there for 18 months and see what happens with the election, and then we'll figure it out later. We're getting a lot of that. So people may have, I'd gather today, put $5 million in our bank. I mean, he knows the owner. He's comfortable with us. We're a strong bank. He knows nothing's going to happen. But we went through the IntraFi Network just to ensure him that his $5 million is insured.
Sure.
So, and there's different models. I have to get you the actual details. But I think you can go up to over $100 million in total deposits with this program. Yes. In some cases, you can actually go higher than that.
Man, doesn't that level the playing field somewhat for the community bank?
It does. Huge. It's huge for community banks. And I think a lot of other banks are starting to utilize that if they can qualify to get in the program. And again, it's an FDIC program. It's nothing shady. It's fully legal. It's
A weakness right there, right?
Exactly. But it's part of it. But that's part of, to bring back, kind of tie everything back in, that's what community banks are having to do, stuff like this to compete with the corporate boys. And, you know, because Bank of America's got the same FDIC limit I have. They're all federal regulated. It's all 250. Now, they have talked about bumping it to 500,000. And I hate to say this, but $500,000 is not as much money as it used to be.
No, they, you know, they, what do they have, like 0.1 cent for every dollar they have guaranteed now?
Yeah. So I mean, I'm seeing deposits. We probably have a big portion of our deposits unsecured at the moment over FDIC insurance because people like our bank. They know we're healthy. I mean, we've got operating accounts that exceed 250 easily. Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's just
these are not the guys that are living on credit with their small businesses.
That is correct. Yeah, these are not the guys living on credit for sure. They're doing well, and but they're borrowers. They're still borrowers, but they're borrowing with the right avenue where they can make money off that asset. Yeah. They may be paying me a higher rate right now, but they're getting a bigger return.
Sure.
So they're building it into the model. They're smart guys.
Yeah.
You know, like yourself.
I appreciate all that.
You never bring me a deal unless another is making some money off of it. That's where you should be.
Well, my daddy always said, the banker, the banker's got to make money, and I mean, that's okay.
Yeah, exactly. So I'm glad we kind of touched on that. Sorry.
No, I appreciate that. I'd like the link on that UBR.
Yeah, UBPR report. UBPR. We call it the UBIPR in the banking world, but it's the UBPR report, and you can go on FDIC.gov, and you can pull up any bank in the United States. Whether it be Alaska, Hawaii, or the contingent states, you can pull anybody up that's an FDIC bank. Now, it won't do credit unions because they're not FDIC. Credit unions are not a bank. People get so confused on that. They're owned by the shareholders within the members within that community. That's why you have to live local or work local to work at it. To borrow or do business at a credit union. Great avenues for consumer loans because they have cheap rates. They don't pay taxes. A lot of people don't realize that.
I did not know
that. Non-profit. A credit union is a non-profit. Yeah. So they don't make money. They put everything back to the credit union or to shareholders. So that's why they take that and they build it into their credit rate risk. So like if you come to me right now, an auto loan's probably 7% on a brand new auto for a tier one borrower with 20% down.
Brand new.
If you go down the street and hook you up with a friend of mine, I send him a lot of business at a credit union, he's going to get you 5.5 because he's built that non-taxpayer.
You're worth a point and a half, sir.
I appreciate that. Yeah, and I'll probably get you down lower than that if you bank with me, but that's the difference. You're looking at about 2-3 points on an auto loan with a bank.
Well, now wait, we went from a point and a half to 2 or 3.
Yeah, 2 or 3 points. Well, it depends on, you know, we can make it sound good if you want. But whatever. But we were at 8.5 there for a while because that's where prime's at right now, 8.5%. We've lowered some of our auto rates some. We don't do a lot of autos, but we'll do some for commercial customers.
Yeah.
If a good customer like yourself were to call me right now and say, hey, I want to go buy my wife a new Escalade, which I think she told me when I came in, she was looking at one. So you might want to talk to her about that. But anyways, if you call me and say, hey, I want to go buy my wife an Escalade, I would tell you, James, I appreciate you calling me and I want to do the loan for you, but I consider you a friend and I love you too much. I'm not going to let you do that with me because you can get way better deal through a credit union because you have really good credit and you got good cash down.
Well, I don't know who.
I would send you to a credit union because of that.
I got you.
You know.
And I appreciate that. I don't know who Escalade is, a Chevrolet product, GM product. So I don't know who does their financing since GMAC went out of business and then Ally Financial formated. Yeah. You know, I don't know who does their financing, but I would think that they're. Because they got, I mean, surely there'd be a smaller rate. I don't know.
You would think theirs has actually went up too. We call them indirect lenders. They're not necessarily a bank. They're a finance company.
Yeah.
Very similar. Yeah. They're regulated in some capacity, but not like a bank.
Yeah.
Totally different situation.
Well, the difference in that interest rate is built into the price of the car.
It's built into the price of the car. Exactly. And auto rates have went up in general. If you go try to buy a car right now, you were getting 4% and 5% at the dealership indirectly. Uh-huh. Cap One's a big indirect lender. Their auto rates are 6-7% right now. From what I saw the other day, it could be different elsewhere, but that's still a lot higher than it was just 3 or 4 years ago.
I charge my wife 10, period. So
you finance, you're the bank.
She pays
the James Nethery Bank. Okay. Yeah. International. I love it.
World headquarters right here.
Yeah. No, it's fun.
No, that's very interesting. I mean, if you can find the time, the UBPR
UBPR link. Report. Yeah, for all your listeners, feel free and go out there, FDIC.gov, or just Google UBPR report or whatever search engine you use, and pull that up, and you just type in the name of your bank. If you're in Wisconsin, type in the name of your bank. It'll pull it up. If you're in Texas, if you're in wherever, New York, Boston, it doesn't matter where you're at. If they're FDIC, they'll be in there, and you can pull them up and look at all their financials. They're required by law to post it, so they'll be on there. I think 1231 will be the last set. We just went through 331. I don't know if they post. I think they post quarterly on the UBPR report or semi-annually, one of the two. But fiscal year end is 9/30. Look at the end of year, 12/31 for your bank and make sure they're healthy. Or talk to your local banker. Most local banks are doing okay right now. Some of them have some liquidity crunches where they've kind of over-leveraged. They've loaned money at a low rate for longer term than they should have. Yep. And that's why you see local banks, they don't like to do long-term fixed rate mortgages, because we don't want a 4% loan on the books because we're having to pay 5.5% for that money. So the bank's losing a 1.5% on it. And people understand that. So that's where that comes from. So that's why we don't do mortgages. We won't fix anything longer than 5 years. Mm. Now, depending on the person. Typically, 5 years is where it's at.
Won't you just roll it over and convert
roll it over. Exactly.
And make them qualify every 2 months. I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah, every 2 months.
That's We've for the that. Builders.
That's
right.
For some. Yeah, we look at it, some of this stuff quarterly. Most of the time, we're looking at this stuff annually. We keep our finger on the pulse daily, though. You know, we're not going to put our good borrowers through the mill. We know they know what they're doing. We're going to trust them, and we're in the deal with them. You know, we're not trying to hit them over the head with a cleaver, which is an advantage for a community bank. Like, we consider ourselves part of that deal, you know, so we're an investor in that deal. So we're trusting our borrower to do the right thing in most cases. And they usually do.
Sure.
Because we're dealing with the right people.
It's a small town. They're going to find out who doesn't do the right thing. Right?
Exactly. Somebody calls me from Alvarado and I don't know him. I may call James like, hey, James, you know this guy? And I've probably done that before. And he'll tell me yes or no, and I trust his opinion enough to go based off of that.
You made my day coming in here, but I got to appreciate that.
Yeah, appreciate you having me.
But also, when you said Paul could sum somebody up in 5 minutes,
he could.
Character, and he never told me. He never told me no. That's awesome. Feel good.
Well, I tell you, he had a big group of good customers that I'm fortunate enough to still bank to this day, and every one of them that I just hit it off with. And I was told that Paul is just a great judge of character right off the bat. And it's been the case with everybody that I've banked. You know, I spot on. And maybe that's because we were a lot alike personality-wise. I don't know. I didn't know Paul very well personally. My dad knew him. But I can tell based off his customers and how they interact with me that we have a lot of the same aspects. I'm not sure. You dealt with him, and you dealt with me, so you could probably answer that question better than me.
Yeah.
I consider him a great banker.
I think y'all are both salt of the earth. He's passed on. You're a salt of the earth guy. Very smart, very intelligent.
Appreciate that.
People person, no question. Yeah. So I don't want to put you on the spot, but we're wrapping up here. But
sure.
How long does it take you now to sum somebody up?
I'm pretty quick at it. I don't know if I'm as good as Paul was, but I can pretty much tell you real quick within my first visit with him.
You've got to talk to him. He didn't have to talk to
him.
Yeah,
I could see him. I try not to stereotype because, you know, you want to get away from that because it's kind of like my first story in banking when I started off as a teller, drive-through teller in a drive-through in a small little town of about 4,000 people in Joshua, Texas.
Yep.
And I started there. And first time I was there, I'd never been in banking, always been a numbers guy, always enjoyed finance, accounting, just solving a deal. I love that, like the aspect of doing a deal. And I first started there. I had a lady would come through the drive-thru in a brand new Mercedes-Benz. I mean, it was beautiful. And she'd come through there and dressed to the T's. You know, she looked like she had money. Well, then I'd go in and do her transaction, and I'd deposit her money and do everything she needed. I always pulled up her account. She was overdrawn. I'm like, what's going on? I guess that Mercedes-Benz payment was a little too much. But I started just looking at her account history and stuff because she'd ask questions. I'm like, man, this poor lady is struggling, you know. Yeah. But she looked like she had a lot of money. If you weren't doing that transaction as a teller, you would never know.
Yeah.
Then a couple months go by, and this guy started coming in the bank, and he was probably about 65, 70 years old.
Oh, farm
was wearing
truck,
overalls.
Dog in the back, yeah.
Exactly what it was. I'm case in point. I'm not going to lie. He was an old Chevy pickup, nicest guy you'd ever meet in your life. Super humble, very nice, down to earth, very nice. And this other lady I was talking about, she'd get kind of testy with me. Like, hey, let's go, you know. Well, I'm trying. I'm sorry, computer's running a little slower today. But this guy was just super nice. Old pickup, had his dog in the back of the truck, had Thumber in the front seat with him, and just in overalls, nicest guy. And you'd think, this poor guy, you know, I want to buy him a sandwich
he's
or something.
Struggling.
He's struggling. I pull up his account. He's got $300,000 in the bank, you know, it's his checking account. Where did this guy get his money? Well, he owned a bunch of real estate, and like, this guy was a businessman.
Yeah.
Like, he was a business mogul, and I started talking, oh, yeah, we know so-and-so. He's been around forever. He owns this apartment complex up the street. He didn't look like he owned an apartment complex. Yeah. So don't stereotype somebody off appearance is where sure. I was going with that, because that was my first model in banking, is the people that have real money typically don't act like it. They're humble, and you notice it by how they operate in life. You know, they've won at life, not just with money, but, you know, physically too, or mentally. Yeah. People love them. They've got a lot of friends. They're well-liked in the community, and I've never heard anybody say anything bad about that person. And that, to me, goes a long, long way in the business realm. So you try to stereotype, but you don't want to, but I try to sum them up in the best of my ability. I see what they ask for, and then I give myself maybe 20 minutes. I'm not down to the 2-second deal like Paul was, but I may get there one day. I got a long ways to go. I'm young. But thanks for asking that.
Yeah. No, sounds to me like I got to go make more friends.
Go make more friends. Yeah.
All right, Bobby. Exactly. Thank you for coming in. Greatly appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for having me. Love to come on with you some other time. Talk some more.
Yeah, perfect.
So, absolutely, man.
Thanks.
Take care.
Thank you for joining us on the Banking with Life podcast. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to like and subscribe and click on that little notification bell. Otherwise, join us on Apple Podcasts and Stitcher for weekly content.